Cabinet today has approved a strategy for New Zealand coastal shipping. This follows a consultation on a draft strategy which was released last October. Nanak King will be releasing his strategy on the 20th of May. We've also noted submissions that are being made to the Royal Commission on Auckland governance by a range of government departments and agencies. These are basically of a factual kind which are designed to assist the Royal Commission. We've agreed to policy for a new electricity amendment bill. This will be announced in detail by David Parker in the next little while, but in essence it deals with continuity of rural supply, which was threatened, of course, by National Party legislation going back to the 1990s in the era of Mr. Bradford. We've finalised the details of the shared equity loan scheme, which will be available through Housing New Zealand from mid-year. And the Minister of Housing will be announcing details of that within the next couple of weeks. We've also approved a reserves and other lands disposal bill. This is non-controversial routine legislation which makes changes to the status of parcels of land, land titles, etc. It was also approved, having had officials negotiate, working holiday schemes with two of the newer EU member states, both Poland and Latvia, and those schemes will be starting at 100 places each way for each country each year. We've noted that the drought is in effect over for most of the country, except for Otago and parts of Canterbury. When we go into fortnightly reports, the issue now is not so much drought, but how farmers get through the winter with low feed. And we've also done, as we do every week, reviewed the hydro water storage. It is slightly better with last week's rain, but obviously it would need quite a lot more yet. You have a statement there from me with respect to the developments in Zimbabwe, which are quite remarkable in that for the first time since independence, Mr. Mugabe's party has failed to win a majority in the Zimbabwe Parliament, and he failed to hold the greatest number of votes in the presidential election. We believe that any second round of voting should be open to international observers and monitors, and we certainly support the UN having a strong role in monitoring to see that the will of the people can be expressed. This is, of course, extremely difficult when you have intimidation of the opposition and its supporters to the degree that has been happening in Zimbabwe and over quite a long period of time. Otherwise, this week you have seen the announcement on toll, the purchase of the train service today. We regard this as a very important part of the overall sustainable transport strategy. This week, in the third week of the recess, I'm out and about Christchurch tomorrow, Tokoroa Wednesday, Porirua Thursday, Ashburton Friday. We have Michael Cullen giving another of his pre-budget speeches to chartered accountants on Wednesday. Phil Goff will have an announcement about the future of Mount Eden Prison that week as well. We're expecting the Household Labour Force survey on Thursday. And later in the week, the results of a consumer satisfaction survey on maternity services. And of course, the House will be back next week. Any questions?
As regional tax, Prime Minister, are you perfectly saying that you'll allow smaller increases but just not give a go ahead to the maximum?
There was a consultation in Auckland on going straight to a 5-cent levy. That's not something the government's prepared to agree to. We've made that plain to Auckland, and I understand they're working now on a phasing, which would see a much reduced amount asked for in the first year of operation.
And are you pursuing open to slower phasing of the emissions trading scheme around transport, which comes next year, and you're looking at pushing that back?
Well, I don't have anything to say about that today, but as I've been saying for a number of weeks, the government's very conscious, and I'm very conscious of a lot of pressures on families and on businesses right now. Both families and businesses are impacted by high fuel prices, interest rates. Families, of course, are feeling the pinch of basic foodstuffs, particularly in the dairy area at the present time. So we are obviously looking at ways in which we can help relieve some of those pressures. In the case of the regional fuel tax, it was always envisaged that it would be phased in as the funding requirements for specific projects approved by government were required. So I'm making it plain that any suggestion of 5 cents levied by Auckland next year is just not going to happen.
Just on the ETS, do you think if you do push that back, particularly for fuel, that might help the Reserve Bank bring down interest rates more quickly?
It could well have that impact. I'm also very aware that the sudden and quite steep latest spike of oil price rises is to a large extent achieving what anything like an ETS or carbon tax can achieve. In other words, petrol consumption is down. That's fewer greenhouse gas emissions. So we need to take all those things into account. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion on the ETS in the Select Committee, and we've got wildly varying submissions coming into that, from those who say that agriculture should be in now, to others saying no one should be in at all. And we've had a parallel consultation going with industry and other stakeholders for quite some time. So there was always going to be improvements to the scheme.
Can I just clarify something? You're saying that the existing high petrol prices are starting to reduce consumption. Are you saying that means we might not need to have the ETS rate?
What I'm saying to you is that the recent quite rapid and steep spike is decreasing petrol consumption. It is decreasing the rate of growth we'd otherwise have seen in petrol consumption. So those are all things we have to take into account.
So that might be achieving what you would otherwise hope to achieve through the...
Well, it's certainly achieving a reduction in the rate of growth of the use of petrol.
What about the pressures the government faces in other areas? I know the Treasury figures today have the Kyoto Protocol obligation at over $1 billion.
Well, we'll have some update, obviously, on that, because that's all pretty much dependent on growth forecasts, what's actually happening with the actual consumption levels of petrol. So I think there's a bit of water to go under the bridge in those figures.
The Greens have said they're concerned that the government is going soft on climate change policy. They say that the figure on the protocol obligation is a sign that the government has to stick to its guns. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm not regarding that as a fine figure. And, of course, today we've been praised by the Greens for buying the train service because of its importance for sustainability. On the other hand, they've taken a different view on a debate around a different aspect of sustainability policy.
Do you have figures on how much petrol consumption or fuel consumption has fallen?
I don't have that with me today, but as soon as we have information, you'll be getting it.
Is there not a risk that you could mess with the integrity of the system of the ETS? Because if fuel is not buying credits, forestry's got no one to sell their credits to. You upset that buyer-seller equation?
I don't think so. I think they'll be short of people to sell credits to.
Is the government at all considering changing the timing of the scheme so that perhaps it is delayed by a year, but more areas of the economy come into it more quickly, the obvious one being agriculture?
Look, agriculture is not going to come in more quickly. We gave a commitment to New Zealand farmers that they would not be brought in the first commitment period, and we're going to keep that commitment.
How much of the negative press that it got last week, the ETS, especially with submitters, do you put down to lobbying over rights to the free allocations as much as they can for free for as long as they can?
Hard to say. People that New Zealand Institute of Economic Research seem to represent, and it would be nice if they said they paid for the work, seem to now think that the carbon tax would have been a wonderful idea.
Do
don't recall that being their position at the time. It wasn't the public arena. But you've got polarised opinion on this. You've got those who say the ETS shouldn't happen ever, and you've got those who say everyone should be in from day one. And then you've got coming down the middle, I think, fairly mainstream opinion represented by Stephen Tindall and the Climate Change Leadership Forum, which are working alongside government and the Select Committee to get the best scheme they can.
Do you think the third
parties are holding you there? Well, the whole process of the Select Committee public discussion is about seeing what's the best scheme we can get which will get the support of Parliament. So that debate continues.
Are you confident that you will have the numbers
I think that across Parliament there's clearly a majority for the emissions trading scheme, and through the parliamentary process you hammer out the shape of that scheme.
Do you think there is a kind of free rally that you have in charge? Since you're gathering quite a support.
Well, we've been down that road. That wasn't so easy.
But you don't think that some of the parties that opposed it last time are thinking it was not such a bad idea after all?
Oh, I'm all ears, but none of them have come forward to say that.
Do you think the public was sort of given enough of a steer as to how much responding to climate change was going to cost them personally, and that's maybe why this has become a problem, that people didn't really appreciate that it was going to hit them personally in the pocket?
No, I don't think that's true. From the outset, for example, with respect to electricity, I made it clear, and I repeat today, that we intend to do something to assist vulnerable consumers. Of course, the introduction of it on electricity is not imminent. So I think there's always been recognition that there's a cost to it. But alongside that, we have to support vulnerable consumers, and also as much advice as we can get out there to households and businesses about how to improve energy efficiency so they can keep their power bills down.
David Park was very unequivocal last week when he asked if there'd been any changes, to the scheme. It seems like he might have taken on a shot in the last few days to change his answers and feel.
Well, I haven't followed every detail and nuance of questions and answers to others, but what I'm saying is we have a bill before the Select Committee. We have a process going on where I think across Parliament there's agreement that an emissions trading scheme is the way to go, but you then have to hammer through the detail of that.
About your coming visit to Japan and South Korea, are you expecting to sign agreements there? Are you going to talk about the free trade agreement with your countries?
Well, it would be nice. But the point I'll be making is that now that China is showing its openness to comprehensive free trade agreements, it does become more important in our view for Korea and Japan to be thinking along those lines. Korea and Japan are very valued trade partners and big markets for New Zealand. But if to the Kiwi exporter the opportunities look better in China because of the FTA, of course attention tends to be diverted to there. And I think that's something that both Japan and Korea are over time going to have to take into account, not just with respect to New Zealand, but with respect to Australia and other countries as well.
Regarding rail, what sort of financial dividend would the government expect from rail, and when would it expect it?
Well, you think you should put those sort of questions to Dr. Cullen. We're not going into this to make money. I should say that buying back in a big way to Air New Zealand, we have been part of making it a very profitable company. But rail's of a different order. It is needed for sustainable integrated transport network. And we had the opportunity to buy and make sure that we could properly integrate into the network rather than going through a third party, which required considerable public subsidy in effect to operate in any case.
But why didn't you look at just agreeing to some subsidy to the third party to operate it when, instead of paying the money, obviously having to invest in new rolling stock, and then presumably having to subsidise that ongoing operation anyway?
We think we can get the best value for the taxpayers' money and the best system through the course that we've chosen. We're light years away from what the old New Zealand Rail used to be. We're light years away from what old-style, pre-1980s state-owned enterprises used to be. State-owned enterprises these days are run well, and run effectively and efficiently, and I think they represent good value, and that's the decision that we made.
There's been some criticism that the government should have done this in 2003, would have achieved the deal. How do you respond to that?
It wasn't possible at that time. The service wasn't for sale at a price which would have been considered reasonable.
Have you received agreement on that area
I haven't received any particular briefing, no. Obviously, Mr. Cosgrove has kept his colleagues appraised of what's happened, but apart from that, I'm just an onlooker.
What's your view on it? It's not a very good look.
Well, as I said here a week or two ago, the behaviour and performance of public servants is the responsibility of the Chief Executive. Now, having looked at some of the detail coming out into the public arena and in the Outland report, it is perhaps a little surprising that it was dealt with the way it was. But that's something the State Services Commission is going into a little further.